In a Million Ways by Akio Mjolnir.
Oh, there's no place like home for the holidays, 'cause no matter how far away you roam, if you want to be happy in a million ways, for the holidays you can't beat home, sweet home.
Hermione balanced on her toes, leaning over the sink to get closer to the mirror to do one last inspection of her makeup. The cosmetic charms she'd learned from Lavender and Parvati weren't something she did very often, and she wanted to be sure she hadn't accidentally made herself look like she'd fallen face first into a vat of finger paints before Christmas dinner.
"You look wonderful."
Warm hands landed on her hips, and she met his dark eyes in the mirror.
"Change nothing."
"You're sure it's not too much?"
"I would not lie to you."
His low tenor, tinged with the accent that had slyly weaseled its way into a source of comfort for her, was soft and low in her ear. He pressed his lips to the space below her ear.
"I only wish you'd left your hair down. You know how I love it down."
"It's much easier to speak to everyone around me at the dinner table when it's put away," she said with a smirk, turning to face him. Sliding her arms around his neck, she lifted to her toes to kiss him sweetly. "Are you sure you don't want to come?" He tutted, shaking his head.
"Don't worry about me, Lubyov Moya. There's no place for me at a Weasley function."
They had had this conversation a few times over the course of their quiet relationship. It saddened her that he felt this way, that he had contented himself to live in the shadowy corners of her life. But as much as she wanted to drag him into the sun with her, he always gave her the same sweet, sorrowful smile and gentle shake of his head. Antonin Dolohov had built too heavy a reputation in his life to slide out from beneath it now.
"Ya tebya obozhayu," she offered,
kissing him once again, cupping his cheek with a gentle hand. He turned his face into it, kissing her palm.
"Your pronunciation is getting very good."
"I have a very patient teacher," she smiled.
The corners of his eyes crinkled with joy, his dimples deepening as he took her in.
"I have a brilliant student. Now go on. You don't want to be late."
"Trying to get rid of me?" she teased,
tongue between her teeth. He kissed her again.
"Never. Now go. I must feed your hellcat before he sets another trap."
She laughed brightly.
"I should like to see one of these traps you insist he sets for you."
"They're very elaborate."
Hermione scrunched her nose.
"Mustn't keep him waiting, then?"
"No,"
Antonin agreed, tapping her nose with a long finger.
"Crookshanks waits for no one."
Finally stepping away, she nodded approvingly.
"Good man."
"If you say so,"
he shrugged affably. She shook her head, always getting rebuffed when she tried to compliment him in such a way. But it's what she saw in him, so she would never stop. He shooed her with a hand.
"Go on, get out of here, or else I will be forced to detain you. You do not know the effort that I am putting into not stripping you."
Her cheeks flushed, and she looked down at herself in jeans and a Fair Isle jumper.
"I'm not even dressed up."
He looked at her pointedly.
"You know what your jeans do to me."
She gave him a wicked grin. She knew exactly what her jeans did to him. Then, elaborately, she looked at her bare wrist.
"Oh, look at the time. I must be off. Ya люблю тебя."
"Ya люблю тебя, висе дойшой."
He smiled after her. Not knowing what those last two words meant, she cocked her head curiously at him, but he merely waved her off.
"You'll be late."
She dropped a handful of flue powder down, calling for the burrow. As the flames carried her off, she resolved to make him translate for her later. Immediately upon arriving, Hermione was met with noise. The Weasley house was never quiet, but on Christmas it verged upon cacophonous. The addition of children, two of Bill's, one of Percy's, and Ginny's first, only made it worse.
"It really is loud in here, isn't it?"
Harry said, greeting her with a warm embrace.
"Come on, Ron spiked the eggnog."
Oh, good, she laughed,
following him to the kitchen.
Hermione, so glad to have you, Molly chirped in greeting,
her arms covered in flour to the elbow, hands busy kneading a ball of dough. Her motherly smile was as bright as ever.
Help yourself. You know where things are. Just finishing off the last of the baking. Thanks, Molly, she said. Happy Christmas.
Harry handed her a mug of steaming something, and she brought it to her nose to give it a whiff. He chuckled. Mulled wine.
Ah, thank you.
How has that project of yours been going? He asked amiably, taking a sip of his own mug. You said you almost had all the funding last I saw you.
Yes. I actually just secured the last few thousand galleons needed to set up the official foundation, she beamed.
His eyebrows rose.
Really? That's fantastic. What's fantastic? Molly chirped, blowing hair out of her face
and wiping at her brow with the back of a flower-covered forearm.
Has Hermione finally found herself a suitor?
No, Harry replied.
Hermione sighed heavily. Part of her wanted to scream from the rooftops. She didn't need to find a suitor, she had one. But she knew the woman in front of her would never understand. She blamed Antonin for the deaths of her brothers. Hermione knew the truth, had seen the memory of that night in a pensive, knew the turmoil and regret of the man who had torn her brothers from this world. He had been branded a Death Eater by a father responsible for more scars than any of the events he'd survived during either war. And that night had been a choice between their lives and his own.
It's all right, love, Molly said. We'll find you someone. I'm really not looking, Hermione replied.
She took another sip of her drink, thinking of Antonin.
I found him in February. Oh, excuse me, Hermione said,
startled as she came around a corner in the Ministry's archives. Arms full of scrolls, some incredibly dusty, she hadn't been paying attention. Dark eyes met hers, a flash of recognition diminishing the tension in his face.
It's no trouble, Miss Granger.
Right, yes, she stammered. Mr. Dolohoff, unspeakable Dolohoff, sorry.
I make you nervous, he observed.
She shook her head, not wanting to be awkward, though he was right.
No, it's just...
You do not have to spare my feelings,
he shook his head. His voice was low and soft.
I have earned my reputation. I must now live with it. I did not mean to startle you. I'll leave you be.
There was something about the look on his face, the soft sorrow in his expression, coupled with the honesty of his statement, that tugged at her heartstrings. He'd only made it a few steps away when she spun around.
Wait!
He stopped, turning slightly, brows raised in surprise.
Miss Granger?
What if we started over?
She asked, not entirely certain she even knew what she was doing. Still cradling an armload of scrolls, she bit her lip and stammered.
I clearly didn't succeed in obliviating you, but I should still apologize. And I'd hardly be a good representative of goodwill if I didn't face my own...
That's more than I deserve,
he said. But he stepped closer, a tentatively hopeful light in his eyes, and as the corner of his lip twitched upward, Hermione noticed the hint of a dimple.
I harmed you far more than you harmed me.
I survived, didn't I?
She offered with a smile. Startled, he returned it.
Somehow...
I've always wondered about the spell, actually, she said. Why don't you tell me about it over coffee?
Wait, Ron laughed. Wait, bloody hell, George, it's going to fall over.
Hermione laughed hysterically, watching George and Ron, joined by their hands, try to balance trays on their heads as they stood on one leg each, having lost a bet to their older brothers, who stood nearby, howling. Atop each of their trays were glasses filled with champagne. Ron had already lost one.
Where'd you get your balance? George asked. Or rather, why haven't you got a bloody dash of it?
Behind Hermione, Charlie's laughter got so strong he wheezed. Bill was wiping tears from his eyes, and Percy was doubled over, clutching Charlie's shoulder with one hand, laughing so hard he was snorting.
Hold on, Jenny cackled,
levitating two miniature tiered cakes to their trays, holding her round stomach and leaning on Harry as she, too, lost her composure. She was the picture of happiness. Hermione watched as Ron teetered sideways and righted himself again.
"Phew," he said, smiling broadly. "That was close."
"This is nothing," Arthur said.
"I don't think they're having nearly hard enough a time."
"Oh, Merlin, Dad, don't,"
George said, his eyes widening. Hermione glanced at Arthur, whose eyes shone with the same mischief that filled his son's. He brandished his wand. Pointing it at their feet, he summoned two balance trainers, round side down, putting each of them on a round footing. Ron let out a shriek and wobbled violently, George yanking at him to keep him from falling over. Ron stayed upright, but he lost the tray altogether, resulting in a crashing wave of laughter. It was Hermione's turn to laugh so hard she cried. The balance trainers were so plainly muggle that she couldn't help it. Her stomach was starting to ache from all of the mirth, so she escaped out to the front porch for a breath of cool air. The clear and starry sky was beautiful. It reminded her, again, of Antonin. Hermione took a deep breath and dropped the handful of flue powder. As the flames in the grate turned green, she called the address that Antonin had written down for her. 15 Gravesend. She arrived to find him waiting for her. He greeted her by clasping her hand in his, lifting it and dipping it to brush his lips across her knuckles.
"You are punctual."
"Of course," she smiled. "Have you been cooking? It smells divine."
"I have," he grinned.
Tipping his head toward the kitchen in invitation, he led her to his table, two glasses of wine already waiting.
"Solyanka. It's hearty, good for cold days like today. And fresh bread."
"You made the bread?"
Hermione asked, impressed.
"Of course. The bread in the stores, it is..."
He shook his head, tutting.
"Better to make it."
Hermione smiled. Somehow, she'd never considered a man with Antonin Dolohov's reputation, both during the wars and after, to be someone that had the time or inclination to cook. He was known as one of the people who was at the ministry at all hours, often going in and out of the archives in the middle of the night when nearly everyone else was home in bed. But of course, this was something they had in common.
"Aren't you always at work?" Harry asked, gesturing with a glass at Hermione. "Michael said he saw you sleeping on one of the work tables in the archive last week."
"I wasn't sleeping,"
Hermione defended herself, trying to stave off the disapproving parental looks she was getting from Molly and Arthur.
"I have never once fallen asleep in the archive. That's absurd."
"Why else would you have your head down on one of those tables?"
"As a matter of fact," she said primly, recalling exactly what he must have seen, "I was listening to a book." "Some of them make noise, Ron," she said.
Percy nodded affirmingly.
"See? Percy knows what I'm talking about."
"It's not the ones you'd really expect someone who isn't looking to murder people without getting caught to read," he said, looking at her pointedly.
"Do I look like a criminal mastermind to you?" she asked.
Yes.
Multiple voices replied in concert. More laughter followed.
"No," Antonin shook his head. "You're reading it in English again."
She let out a frustrated grunt.
"It looks like a bloody pea."
He chuckled and kissed her temple.
"I know."
"Did English trick you like this when you were learning?" she asked.
He nodded.
"I still sometimes read it as an R, but I haven't said it out loud in a long time."
He tapped the paper on the table where he'd written a few beginner phrases for her. She took a deep breath and returned to it.
"Dobro pozhalovat."
"Yes, well done, Milaya."
"Dobro pozhalovat,"
she said again, smiling at him. He smiled right back, eyes crinkling with happiness, his dimples deep creases in his cheeks. She bit her lip, staring into his dark eyes, and then tried one of the few phrases she'd learned without him, the one she'd specifically sought out to surprise him with.
"Ya lublu tebya," she said.
His face went slack with surprise, brows rising and lips parting, a disbelieving smile creeping slowly across his mouth.
I didn't teach you that one.
I learned it for you, she said.
Turning toward him, she pressed her hands into her lap, her shoulders rising as she took in his reaction. He brought one hand to her face, cupping her jaw in his large hand, letting her eyes flutter shut as he ran his thumb over her cheek. She soaked in the moment, relishing how gentle he was, how safe she felt, how loved he made her feel. And then he cleared his throat. She opened her eyes again to find his were glassy with emotion, and she furrowed her brow.
Antonin?
I don't understand, he began.
He brought his other hand up to the other side of her face, sliding closer to her.
How did I come to this? What have I done to deserve something so good?
Antonin,
she breathed, bringing one of her hands up to cover his.
I love you. I will always love you, he said.
He pulled her face to his, using his mouth and tongue to consecrate the vow with a kiss that shifted the axis of her whole world. When he finally pulled away from her, breathing heavily and leaning his forehead against hers, he added,
I don't think one lifetime is enough time to love you properly.
The intensity of it was overwhelming. If her confession had made him emotional, his had taken her heart in his hand and claimed it, an eternal embrace that would never falter, no matter the adversity that they might face. She let her tears fall, the honest truth sliding wetly from her eyes to his fingers, and he smeared them away, kissing her face in their wake.
Don't cry, Lyubimaya, he said.
She laughed wetly.
I can't help it. I'm just so happy.
Merlin, I think it was the worst date I've ever been on,
Charlie chuckled, shaking his head and spearing another fingerling potato with his fork. Beside him, Bill chuckled, having cornered his brother into the conversation in the first place. Across from him, Ron's eyebrows were doing that strange, squirming caterpillar thing they did when he couldn't work out how to feel about something.
She took her shirt off, right in the middle of the restaurant.
Right in the middle, yes, Charlie shrugged.
We weren't even in a booth, just a little table, right there in the center of everything.
Arthur elbowed him from his other side.
You have to go through a few bad experiences to find a good one, he said.
Then he smirked at Molly.
Or so I've heard. I wouldn't know.
Lucked out on your first try, Molly winked at him.
Speaking of experiences dating,
Charlie sucked in a breath, scanning the table for someone upon whom to shift the spotlight.
How about you, Hermione? Anything fun lately?
Just work, she deflected. I've just secured the last of the funding I need to get started with the setup.
Boo, Harry said, shaking his head. You've already told that story today. No repeating.
Hermione rolled her eyes, shrugged, and passed the spotlight again.
What about you, George?
The prolonged groan he let out in response made the whole table laugh.
My answer is not going to change,
he insisted, his mouth in a tight line, his eyes darkening with annoyance.
It will never change. I won't have you bearing the weight of my sins.
Don't you want to go out sometimes? Do things together?
We do things together all the time, he said,
gesturing around himself at his flat.
Here, at yours. If you want to go out for dates, we can do it in the Muggle world.
She sat down on the couch, closing her eyes. She understood, she really did. But there were days that it wore on her that he'd asked her to keep their relationship quiet. There was a ministry gala in a few weeks, one at which she was to be recognized for her hard work on the Foundation for Endangered Magical Creatures. That she wouldn't be able to openly celebrate it with the love of her life broke her heart. He sighed, sitting down beside her. She leaned into him as he put a long arm around her, breathing in the comforting scent of him.
There is one place we could go. It's not public, it's... I would need to go and make sure the wards and charms are still in place. I haven't been in years, but it would be something new for us.
She turned in his arms, sitting sideways so that her legs tented his, her feet on his other side. Toying with the pull strings of his hoodie, she hummed curiously, prompting him to keep speaking.
"It's my family's cabin," he said. "It's on the shore of Lake Baikal. Very remote. The entire property is warded heavily to protect it. I would need to add you to them before you can go."
"Tell me about it," she said, taking his hand in hers. She twined their fingers together and lay her head on his shoulder, listening as he regaled her with stories of his past. Hermione listened as Bill, Fleur, Harry, and Ginny shared horror stories of their parenting escapades, the rest of the table laughing as they managed, in true Weasley fashion, to make things like projectile vomiting and overflowing diapers sound hilarious. But as she continued her meal, quietly taking in the Weasley atmosphere, all she could think about was Antonin, how she'd left him alone in his flat, once again unable to spend an important event with her, all in an effort to keep his overbearing reputation from tarnishing her by association. Her potatoes were getting cold anyway. Standing abruptly, she smoothed the front of her sweater as the entire table pivoted to look at her.
"I'm sorry," she began, looking at the people around her. "It's been a lovely dinner, truly, but I just realized..."
"Miney?" Ron asked, raising a brow.
"I just have somewhere I need to be," she said, and before anyone could protest, she darted out into the living room, grabbed a handful of flue powder, and called, "15 Gravesend!"
The familiar hurtling, twisting feeling of going through the flu network was strangely comforting. She watched living room after living room go by, until finally she emerged in the right one. There was his comfortable couch where they had first made love. The end table piled with books about time turners and portkeys that he was reading for work. The coffee table, strewn with parchments covered in both of their handwriting, evidence of Hermione's efforts to learn Russian. And in the window, Crookshanks, who they'd finally brought here after realizing Hermione was spending more time in his king-sized, sinfully comfortable bed than her own. His voice came from the bedroom, carrying softly to her ears. He was singing softly to himself, something he did often when he thought he was alone. Songs from his childhood, songs from his homeland, songs his mother used to sing to him as she mended his bruises following his father's lessons. Towing her shoes off and leaving them by the hearth, she padded softly in her wool socks into the bedroom, where Antonin sat on his side of the bed in gray joggers and an old t-shirt, tinkering with a wooden brain-teaser puzzle Hermione had given him as part of his Christmas gift that morning. She watched him, smiling to herself, and finally made her presence known.
"Is it fun?"
His eyes cut upwards and sideways, and when he saw her through the shaggy curtain of his hair, his face lit up, eyes crinkling at the corners and dimples deepening with the closed-mouthed smile he gave her. He returned his gaze to the puzzle for one more second of fidgeting. Then he lifted it in long fingers, perfectly solved.
"You have good timing."
"Already?" she feigned frustration. "I just got you that. You're too smart."
"I must keep my mind sharp so that I can keep up with you," he grinned.
Standing, he crossed the room and wrapped his arms around her.
"What happened? Shouldn't you still be eating?"
"Nothing happened," she sighed, sliding her arms around his middle. "I just realized that I wasn't in the right place."
"Meaning?"
"Meaning? I wanted to spend Christmas with you," she said, looking up at him.
He smiled softly down at her, and she lifted onto her toes to solicit a kiss.
"I wanted to be home. And home is where you are."
The fire he lit in her heart when he smiled only proved she'd made the right choice.